भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय So we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam. We're in Canto 5. We're in chapter 18. We're on text 30. Translations and purports by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki. The text is in prose. I'm going to go right to the word for word. Om. O my Lord. Namaha. Respectful obeisances. Bhagavate, unto you the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Akuparaya, in the form of a tortoise. Sarvasattva guna visheshanaya, whose form consists of sudasattva, transcendental goodness. Anuplak, Anupalakshita Stanaya, unto you whose position is not discernible. Namaha, my respectful obeisances. Varshmane, unto you who, although the oldest, are unaffected by time. Namaha, my respectful obeisances. Bhumne, to the great one who can go everywhere. Nama, nama, repeated obeisances. Avastanaya, the shelter of everything. Namaha, respectful obeisances. Te, unto you. So a lot of namahas there, a lot of offering of obeisances to the Almighty Lord. Translation, O my Lord, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you who have assumed the form of a tortoise. You are the reservoir of all transcendental qualities. And being entirely untinged by matter, you are perfectly situated in pure goodness. You move here and there in the water, but no one can discern your position. Therefore, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. Because of your transcendental position, you are not limited by past, present, and future. You are present everywhere as the shelter of all things, and therefore, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you again and again. Purport. In the Brahma Samhita it is said, Goloka eva nivastai nivasati akilatma bhutaha. The Lord always remains in Goloka, the topmost planet in the spiritual world. At the same time, He is all-pervading. This paradox is only possible for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is full of all opulences. The Lord's all-pervasiveness is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna states, Ishvara sarva bhutanam riddesh juna tishtati. The Supreme Lord is situated in everyone's heart, O Arjuna. Elsewhere in Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says, Savasya chaham riddhi sannivishto matashmritir gyanam apahanam cha. I am seated in everyone's heart, and from me comes remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. Therefore, although the Lord is present everywhere, He cannot be seen with ordinary eyes. As Aryama says, the Lord is Anupalakshita Stana. No one can locate Him. This is the greatness of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Please forgive my voice. I have a little bit of a cold. Can someone hand me that madunga, please? I was thinking that we're deep into the Varsha of Jambudweep. So I thought it was going to, before getting into the pure philosophy of this verse, I thought it would be a little nice or a little bit refreshing, or to refresh everybody's memories, what's going on in this section of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And so therefore I'm going to give a quick overview of the things that have come before this verse, because we've been reading philosophical verse after philosophical verse, and so I wanted to take the time to do this. I hope nobody minds, and then we'll get a little bit into the philosophy of this particular verse. So what we're experiencing right here is we're experiencing a description of the section of the universe that is called Jambudweep. Now, in the center of Jambudweep, there's a mountain. It's called Mount Sumeru, and sometimes it's called Mount Meru, and it's shaped something like a madunga. It doesn't have this bulge in the middle, but it's a very strange mountain because it's small at this side and it's big on the top side. Usually mountains are big at the base and they're small at the top. So Mount Sumeru is a little bit different. It's small at the base and it's big at the top. Upside down mountain, something like a madunga, okay? So this mountain is solid gold. And just to help you out, I brought in a lotus flower. It's show and tell time. Children, we are in kindergarten. It's show and tell time. And if you open up a lotus flower, you'll find something very interesting inside of lotus flower. You'll find what I think the scientists call the stamen. That's the stamen. It's inside the lotus flower. You can notice inside the lotus flower is a beautiful yellow color. That's the color of Mount Sumeru. Okay? And you'll notice that the stamen inside the lotus flower is narrow at the bottom and it's wide at the top. That is the shape of Mount Meru. So I'm going to throw it. Who wants it? And you can pass it around and you can look at it, okay? So that's Mount Sumeru. Now, Mount Sumeru, which is in the middle of Jambudweep. Now, for those of us who are too young, you cannot imagine this. For those of us who are over 45, we can imagine this. Remember the days of vinyl records? Okay? There was a turntable. It was completely round, right? And then you took the record. It had a little hole right in the center of the record. And in the turntable, there was like a pin. And you took that record and you put it down on the pin. It's amazing that I have to explain this to people. In the modern age, nobody knows what this is. And then the vinyl record would turn around and round, and you put a needle on it and it would play. So Mount Sumeru is like that. It's the pin in the middle of Jambudweep. And around Mount Sumeru, turning around and around Mount Sumeru, on a flat plane, is the rest of Jambudweep, okay? Now, Mount Meru is 84,000 yojanas high. So a yojana is 8 miles. If you do the mathematics, that comes out to 672,000 miles high. The highest mountain in the world is Mount Everest, and I think it's about 7.5 miles high. It's 29,800 feet, something like that. So this mountain is 672,000 miles high. At least 670,000 miles higher than Mount Everest. Okay? Now, the thing is not all of this mountain is visible from the Earth planet, because 16,000 yojanas, or 128,000 miles, is below the Earth planet, below the Bhumandala plain. So you take this Madanga about from here down would be the Bhumandala plain. Okay? So, now, the bottom of the plain, the very bottom of the mountain, is 256,000 miles in circumference. And the very top of the mountain is the residence of the demigods. We're going to get that into that shortly. And that's 256,000 miles in circumference. So it's huge. Okay? And it sits in the middle of the Bhumandala plain. Now this Bhumandala plain that is coming out like the phonograph record is divided into seven sections. The interior section is called Jambudweep. That's where we live. We are on the Jambudweep. And again, thinking about a phonograph record, you have the label. Remember how the labels used to be put on phonograph records? Right around the hole in the middle of the record, there was a label, and it said, you know, the Beatles, Abbey Road, or whatever the record was. So there, that's like Jambudweep. Jambudweep is the interior section of the Bhumandala plain, right at the base of Mount Sumeru, and bordering Jambudweep is the ocean of salt water. And then you cross the ocean of salt water, and there's another ring that goes around. Again, think of a plaque record. And then you get to another ocean of milk, another ring, an ocean of not motion of milk, I'm sorry, an ocean of yogurt, and on yogurt. So there's ocean of salt water, ocean of yogurt, ocean of sugarcane juice, ocean of liquor, ocean of clear water, ocean of milk. And this way, and then there's the land masses, okay? Now, then, the entire plain of Bhumandala is 8 million miles in circumference, okay? So then there's this very interesting information that's given, that now we're going to talk specifically about the interior island, which is called Jambudweep. Jambudweep is divided into nine sections. And there's something that's very interesting down there. Now remember, Mount Sumeru itself is 872,000 miles high. Now, at the bottom of Mount Sumeru, there are four mountains, huge mountains. They're very small when compared to Mount Meru. They're only 80,000 miles high. The circumference of the Earth, people, is I think 42,000 miles around. If you go around the equator, how much? Okay, the circumference of the Earth is 23,000 miles. Thank you for that correction. Okay, this mountain is 80,000 miles high. So there's four mountains, one, two, three, four, in each of the four cardinal directions, kind of like flying buttresses, you know, if you can think of the Cathedral of Notre Dame, okay? Flying buttresses supporting the whole mountain, okay? So then we get these mountains down below, are the city of the demigods are up on top of the mountain here, and these mountain down below are the playgrounds of the demigods. And we heard all about that. Okay, I'm not going to get into that exactly, okay? Okay, now these four supporting mountains that are the playgrounds of the demigods, they're 80,000 miles high, and at the base, the circumference of the base is 80, it's not the circumference. What's the line that goes across the middle of the circle? The radius. The radius of the base is 80,000 miles wide, okay? Now, just to help us out, there's east. That's where the sun rises, so we'll call this east. This is where the sun sets, that's west. Behind me is Calcutta, so that's south. And if I keep on going this way, I'll eventually hit China, that's north, okay? So north, east, south, and west. So on the eastern side, right below the city of Lord Indra, is a mountain called Mandara Mountain. Now there's something very interesting about these mountains. Along with the mountains, there's different reservoirs of, we can't say water, of different substances that are around or on these 80,000 miles high mountains or in the valleys. This mountain is accompanied by a huge reservoir of milk water, milk. It's filled up with milk. And down here is the famous Nandana Gardens that we hear so much. The Nandana Gardens of the heavenly King Indra. Okay. Now the specific benefit of these lakes is that anyone who bathes in these lakes, just by bathing in them, one gets natural mystic power. So this is how the demigods get their mystic powers. They come down to these lakes, they bathe in them, and then natural mystic power arises in them, okay? The devas and the upadevas, okay? Now, the amazing thing about this mountain is on top of it, there's a mango tree. Right on the peak of the mountain, there's a mango tree, and it's 800 miles wide. The radius is 800 miles. That's the distance from Calcutta approximately to Delhi. That's how big the tree is. It's 8,800 miles high. So the tree itself is 8,800 miles high. To give you an idea, if you go from New York to San Francisco, it's approximately 3,200 miles. So the tree is 2.5 times the width of the United States of America. Okay? It's a tree. Now, this tree has mangoes on it. These mangoes drop, and they create a river called Arunoda River. These mangoes mix with other substances, and so this entire Varsha is filled with rivers made of mango juice. Okay, so that's the Mandara Mountain below the city of Lord Indra. Then, this is the northern side. Oh, wait a second. Yeah, northern, no, that's Calcutta, okay. This is the northern side. This is the city of Kuvera up on top of the mountain. And beneath that, again, is this is another mountain, the same height and the same breadth. The base is 80,000 radius. The height is 80,000 mile high. On that mountain, there's a rose apple tree. It has a trunk that has the radius of 800 miles. It's again 8,800 miles high, and the branches spread out for 8,800 miles as well. There's a lake of pure honey. There, the gardens that the demigods played in are called the Chaitraratha Gardens. And there are many waterfalls and rivers that flow, because these rose apple jambu, they're called jambu fruits, they fall from this tree, they break open, and the juice spreads out everywhere, and it collects, and there's waterfalls, and there's of this juice. Okay? So now we're going to come to the western side. This is, again, there's a mountain there right at the base of Mount Meru. It's called the Suparsha Mountain. It's 80,000 high. The base is has a radius of 80,000 miles. The garden that the demigods play in there is called the Vibrajaka Garland. There's a huge reservoir of water there made of sugarcane juice. I forgot to mention that under this mountain, there's a reservoir of water made from pure honey. Here there's a reservoir of water made from sugarcane juice. And the main thing is that there's a tree there. Again, it has the same dimensions as the other tree, 800 mile radius, 8,800 miles high. It has a spread of 8,800 miles, the branches spread. And from the hollow of these trees, there's various hollows in this tree that are 8 foot wide, and out of the hollows of this tree flow a constant flow of honey. Okay? So then we finally come to the southern side, where in Lord Yamaraj's city is right up here. And then there's this mountain. It's called Kamuda Mountain. It lies right below the city of Lord Yamaraj. Again, the mountain is 80,000 miles high. The base of the mountain has a radius of 8,000 miles. There the water is pure celestial water. The garden there is called Sarvatobhadra. And this the tree there that is on top of this mountain is a banyan tree. Again, the same dimensions. It's put down roots all over the mountain, and from these roots pure water flows down, and therefore the whole land is inundated by pure, pristine, first-class water. Okay? That's Mount Meru, the center of the Bhumandala planetary systems. And then around these mountains are different mountains, sub-mountains, and then below them are sub-sub-mountains, and then between them there's different varshas. Okay? Now the main thing is, on the top of the mountain there's 8 cities. In the cardinal direction, in the north there's the city of Kuvera. In the east, there's the city of Indra. In the south, there's the city of Yamaraj. In the west, there's the city of Vayu. And then there's those are the cardinal direction. And then in between them are cities of other demigods. So there's 8 cities of 8 prominent demigods up there. And in the very center of the top of Mount Meru is Brahmapuri, the city of Lord Brahma. And just to really blow your minds, the city of Brahmapuri is made of entirely of gold. And according to the Srimad Bhagavatam, it's 80 million miles in circumference, would make it larger than Bhumandala himself. And the only thing I can figure out is that Lord Brahma must know how to fold space. That's the only way I can say it. He must know how to overlap and fold space in such a way So somehow the city in the center of Bhumandala, on the top of Mount Meru, is bigger than Bhumandala himself. Okay? Now, just for the fun of it, I thought this is very enjoyable. We'll see if I have enough time for the pure philosophy. I would like you to read a description for you of one of the cities on top of Bhumandala. This is the city of Lord Indra on top of Bhumandala. And it's a very, very, very far out description, if I can find it. I should have put a... Okay, let's see. Indra. Just give me a second. It's worth the time. Okay, yeah. I'm really sorry about this. I should have. Oh, here it is. 513. By the way, because I happen to be in the body I'm in, I couldn't help but noticing how many times the beautiful women of this city are described. So real opulence means beautiful women. If there's no beautiful women, there's no opulences. So again and again, the beautiful women will be described. Okay, so Bali Maharaj has approached the city of King Indra, which is on top of Meru Mountain, and he's about to run it over with his forces. And here's a description of that city. Please listen, it's very entertaining. King Indra's city was full of pleasing orchards and gardens, such as the Nandana Garden. Because of the weight of the flowers, leaves, and fruits, the branches of the eternally existing trees were bending down. The gardens were visited by pairs of chirping birds and singing bees. The entire atmosphere of that city was celestial. Many beautiful women, protected by the demigods, sported in the gardens of that city. Those gardens had lotus ponds full of swans, cranes, chakravartas, and ducks. The city was surrounded by trenches full of Ganges water, known as the Akasha Ganga, and by a high wall, which was the color of fire. Upon this wall were parapets for fighting. The doors of the city were made of solid gold plates, and the gates were of excellent marble. These were linked by various public roads. The entire city had been constructed by Vishwakarma. The city was full of courtyards, ride roads, assembly houses, and not less than 100 million airplanes. The crossroads were made of pearl, and the sitting places were made of diamond and coral. Everlasting, beautiful, and youthful women who were dressed with clean garments glittered in that city like fires with flames. They all possessed the quality of Shama. The breezes blowing in the streets of that city bore the fragrance of the flowers that were falling from the hair of the women of the demigods. Apsaras passed by on the streets. By the way, the apsaras are born from the ocean of milk. So this is a city filled with apsaras. The apsaras passed by on the streets, which were covered with the white fragrant smoke of aguru incense, emanating from windows with golden filigree. The city was shaded by canopies decorated with pearls, and the domes of the palace had flags of pearls and gold. The city always resounded with the vibration of peacock, pigeons, and bees. And above the city flew airplanes that were full of beautiful women who constantly chanted auspicious songs that were extremely pleasing to the ear. The city was filled with the sound of mridangas, conch shells, kettle drums, flutes, and well-tuned string instruments, all playing in concerts. There was constant dancing, and the Gandharvas sang in sweet, beautiful voices. The combined beauty of Indrapuri defeated beauty personified. Not one person who was sinful, who is envious, who is violent towards others, who is violent towards other living entities, who is cunning, who is falsely proud, who is lusty, or who is greedy, could enter that city. The people who lived there were all completely devoid of these faults. Not one person who was sinful, envious, violent towards other living entities, cunning, falsely proud, lusty, or greedy could enter into that city. The people who lived there were all devoid of these faults. Okay? So that's the city of Indrapuri on top of Mount Meru. Now, Brahmapuri is in the center of Indra, is in the center of Mount Meru. So the question comes that often we hear that Lord Brahma has a planet called Satyaloka. And it's the very top of the universe. And we also often hear that the demigods have planets in the higher outer spaces. So what is this? It says that this is the residence of Lord Brahma, yet he has a planet high in the higher up stratospheres of the universe. So what's going on with that? So the way to explain that is that I was recently reading in the somehow or other, sometimes I check my email and I check the news from the United States of America, that what's her name? Jane Fonda was selling her house, her ranch in Wyoming. Just a little blurb in the news. She was selling her ranch in Wyoming. I can guarantee you that is not the only house that Jane Fonda owns. I'm sure she has a house in Beverly Hills. I'm sure she has a house in New York. I'm sure she has a house in Paris and maybe a house in a few other cities. So even on this Earth planet, we see that when people get extremely opulent, they have residences all over the Earth planet. That's true. And they fly from these residences. There are people on this Earth planet who can just fly at will from residence to residence and to residence to residence. So Lord Brahma has, it's true, he has a planet in the topmost stratospheres of the known universe, but he also has this summer home on top of Mount Meru. And all the demigods who live there, they have many residences. So then the Ganga, it flows down through the heavenly planets. It flows through the moon planet, and then it falls down directly into the middle of Brahmapuri. It travels in four directions. It flows down in the middle, and it travels in the cardinal directions, north, south, east, and west. And then it falls over Mount Meru, and then it spreads throughout the entire island of Jambudweep. And we were hearing how the Ganga is traveling through different varshas in, I lost my piece of paper. So we were hearing how the Ganga was traveling through different varshas. So we heard how it traveled through Ila Vritadvarsha, where Lord Shiva resides, and where the son of Yamaraj, Bharadwaj, predominates. And there, oh, thank you very much. And there, Lord Shiva, he sings prayers to Lord Shankarshan. So we heard about that, and then we heard the prayers from about Lord Shankarshan. And then from there, we heard, I made a mistake there. In Ilavrita, only Lord Shiva lives there, and he sings prayers glorifying that form of the Lord that is known as Shankarshan. Then in the second place, we heard how Bhadrasrava, who is Yamaraj's son, he prays to that form of the Lord known as Hayashirsha. These are in different sections of Jambudvip, down below the top of Mount Meru. Then we heard how Pallad Maharaj, he sings different prayers to Lord Nrisingadev. Lakshmi Devi sings different prayers to that the personality of Godhead Pradyumna. And then Vaivishvatu Manu, he sings prayers to the form of the Lord known as Matsya. And now we've finally arrived at the verse of today, where Aryama, who is the king of the Pritiloka planet, somehow or other he has a very intimate relationship with Yamaraj. His Varsha is right below Yamaraj's city that sits on top of Mount Meru. Whenever Yamaraj has to check out of his posts, for example, when Yamaraj became Vidura during the pastimes of Lord Krishna, it was Aryama who takes Yamaraj's post whenever Yamaraj has to go away and he can't do his job. So Aryama is the main person in charge of the Pritiloka planet. And now he's going to sing these prayers to Lord Kurma. And the first thing, and that now we've arrived at where we are. So that's a overview of where we've been. We're running out of time, and I'm not going to be able to get deeply into the prayer, the philosophical aspects of the prayer. I got 3 minutes. Sorry about that. But I thought it would be worthwhile to review what's going on in this section of the Bhagavatam, because we've just been hearing philosophy for a long, long time. Basically, in this prayer that's being spoken by Aryama to Korma Rupa, to the form of the Lord as Korma, he's praising three qualities of the Lord: that the Lord is omniscient, he's omnipotent, and he's omnipresent. That the Lord is everywhere. And he's aware of everything, at all places, at all times. I can give you Shastra to back up that point of view, but we're all out of time. So I'll stop here. And if anyone has any questions, we can. Yeah, go ahead.
Sadashiva?
Mean Maha Sadashiva. Okay. Okay. This hits me out of a little bit out of left field. But my understanding is there's a above the material world and beyond the effulgence of the Brahma Jyoti and beyond the causal ocean, there's a Dham in the spiritual world. It's Mahesh Dham. And there's the original form of Shiva, and that's called Shadashiva. It's an eternal form of Shiva. and it's there in the spiritual world. So that form of Shiva is called Shuddha Shiva. Am I correct? Yeah. And the other Shivas that appear, like the Shiva that's born from the forehead of Lord Brahma, these are expansions of that Shuddha Shiva. Okay? Shiva has an eternal abode in the spiritual world. It's the... I've been told, or I've heard it explained, that anybody who worships Lord Shiva as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, or as the... cannot go to that Shuddha Shiva abode. But only people who worship Shiva as Vaishnava Yatha Shambhu, who worship Lord Shiva as the greatest Vaishnava, they are allowed entrance into that abode. So sometimes we hear that Krishna is called Mukunda, the giver of liberation, or the personality who can give us freedom from the cycle of birth and death in this material world and bring us back home, back to Godhead, to the spiritual world. But there is some leeway in the Shastra that those who worship Lord Shiva in this particular mood as Vaishnava Yatha Shambhu, Lord Shiva as the greatest Vaishnava, they can also escape the cycle of birth and death by this proper worship of Lord Shiva in this particular mood. Like I said, generally, the general rule of thumb is that Krishna is the giver of liberation. But this particular form of Shiva, which is called the Shuddha Shiva, can also give liberation from the cycle of birth and death in this material world. That is my understanding. Anyone has anything else to add? Please add. Okay, anybody else want to say anything? Any questions, any comments? Okay, it's 10 of 9. Thank you for listening. Hare Krishna.